really have assigned seats per se, but I don't know any of you. So I do this, although you look familiar to me, I don't know why.
I was in your class for like four classes and I had to transfer out because of practice.
Oh, all right. That's why you look familiar.
I found it interesting, that's why I want to come back.
Yeah, boy, that's what I like. So I will figure out who you are by the end. Like, I recognize you. I see you in the hall a lot over the years. I don't really recognize anybody else. No big deal. I'll get you down. So just do me a favor, just over the next couple of weeks, just kind of stay in these seats where you are right now just till I get name with face. All right, second, how many of you are not enrolled in Engage
for this class?
So HST 109.
Do we have to do it ourselves?
No. Have you gone in? Do you see that you have the access to it? You're going to have to make sure you're enrolled in Engage. You're going to have to make sure you're enrolled in Engage today because you do have an assignment, which is due tomorrow. So if you want, while I'm babbling, take a look real quick and make sure you can get into the shell for this class. The homework assignment is going to be watch a pre-recorded video in which I do a syllabus review. I'm not doing syllabus today. It's all on that video. And then tomorrow, beginning at 8 o'clock in the morning, going all the way until 11:59 p.m., there is going to be an extra credit quiz that's going to open up in Engage a few lines below where the video is. That quiz is on the video. And basically, I'm going to ask you a bunch of multiple choice questions. Actually, no, I think it's true and false questions. What?
Sorry, that was a false
question. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. The numbers kind of screwed up. That's all right. I'm pretty sure it's a true and false quiz on basically things that are in the syllabus. It's extra credit. It's not punitive. So if you do well on it, it's stuff points that gets added into your average and helps boost you over the course of the semester. Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
You? Good. You have a nice break? Very good. All right. So, like I said, the video is there now, so you can go in and watch it anytime between now and whenever. But the quiz is only open tomorrow. So, again, if you're not engaged, you're going to have to go over to IT if you're not connected to the shell, just to make sure you're linked. All right. What we are going to do in here is we are going to do Western Civilization from 1000-ish. So we're going to start with the Crusades, and we're going to go all the way up to the French Revolution. Hi.
What's
all
supposed to be?
Put your name on it, where you sit, roughly, on that sheet.
I'll sit there for it.
So you're there. All right, then you can move and you can rewrite your name somewhere else. So you, sir, are there. So if you want to move, now's the time. All right, so 1000, give or take. So we'll start with the Crusades all the way up to the French Revolution. We're going to do Western Civ. So what's that Western Civ? That's Europe. I do global in another class where I talk about all of the global civilizations. But here, we're only going to talk about the developments in Europe. And what we're going to do is we're going to touch upon the major events. And we're going to see how culture kind of shifted. Of course, the big pivot point was the Renaissance. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But this is not a 400-level class. So we don't have a targeted focus. So we're going to survey. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go through the major topics. And you are here. And you are going to basically walk away understanding the gist of things. Now, do I expect any of you to become subject masters? No, not necessarily. Again, it's a required class. I know most of you are going to take this to graduate. But my goal is always, you're going to walk out of here knowing way more than you did when you came in. Which is always a good thing. Because after all, you guys are spending a lot of money to be in college. And if you don't learn anything, you're just wasting your time. The other thing that I always tell students is that it's a skill to take history. It's not like math, where the teacher throws down an equation, you can sit there with a calculator, and you can figure it out. History is, in general, any history class, requires a bunch of things. There you go. I think everyone else's name's on there, right? I kind of mentally watch whenever we came at. It requires an attention to detail. It requires doing extra work above and beyond just showing up in class. It requires an open mind. That's one of the most troubling things that I've seen over the course of my 5+ decades on Earth, is that people have become very, very narrow. Everyone did this, yes?
People today are, generally speaking, very narrow-minded, and they tend to be presentists, meaning they think that today, in today's world, is all there ever is, and today's world is always right.
Well, that's not ever true. Our opinions are based upon the times in which we live. So you go back 500 years ago, guess what? The opinions then were right for the times. So what we need to do is we need to keep that in mind, because the people back then obviously thought about things differently than we do. Doesn't mean we're right, doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means we're different, and being different is okay. In fact, I like being different, because it makes life interesting.
So I'm going to give you the facts. I'm not going to try to present anything that is offensive, but I know some of us are like porcelain dolls, and sometimes we can't handle things. But again, I'll never say anything to any of you individually. I'm just going to tell you the facts, and the facts are what they are. Facts can't be offensive. Facts are just facts. So if there's something you disagree with, that's fine. Raise your hand. Say something in class. I don't mind having discussions. But I know most of you probably take history classes, so you can sit back and veg. And I'll fill the time very well, because but the college also tells me this stuff we have to cover. So long story short, if you heard anything about me from any of the classmates, it's either he's really nice, it's really not that bad of a class, or he's just really boring and hard. You know, I'm not really ever in the middle, which is odd, but hey, it is what it is. So hopefully you'll enjoy yourselves. And again, hopefully you'll grow and benefit from the time that we spend together, because we're going to be together until May. All right. So for those of you who came late, make sure you're enrolled and engaged. There's a video in there that I want you to watch. I'm not doing syllabus today. I did a video. I want you to watch that. It covers everything in the class. The big thing to remember is that... I never did the syllabus update. I'll have that done by the end of the day. But Engage has the syllabus. Engage has links to the textbook. And in this class, there's an extra credit book called A Reader where you can get extra credit points, ton of extra credit points. That's all in Engage. We're also going to do our exams out of class. That's going to be through Engage. So if you don't have a laptop that works well, I suggest that you get your hands on one. Or you could always go into the info commons and use one of those computers. Also, on test day, make sure you're at a place that has solid Wi-Fi. I know some of the connections in some of the dorms are sketchy at best. So you might want to, on test day, go to wherever. So tests, paper submission, videos if I got to do a video. Everything is going to be Engage, but I also have a website in there. There's a link in Engage, maybe third or fourth line down when you open up the shell, proflamanic.com. That's where you get the extra stuff. Like, I teach by PowerPoint. I do that because I have wicked messy handwriting, and you would not be able to read my handwriting if I was to start writing everything on the board. So it's cleaner, but I provide all these information to you in advance. So find the link to my website, go to the individual class page, HST 109, and way down at the bottom are all links to what I call outlines, but basically I take the PowerPoints, and instead of giving you printouts of the PowerPoints, which are kind of small, I just put it in a PDF so you can minimize sheets. Print them out, bring them to class, fill in the dots, or if you have a program that allows you to convert it to Word, you know, or microprocessor, you cannot do all that stuff if you want. Take notes by paper, take notes by computer, I don't really care. But keep in mind, what we see on the screen isn't all necessarily all the information. All this is an outline. It's primarily to help you organize your thoughts. So don't think you can sit back and simply copy the stuff off on the screen and you'll be all set. You're going to have to do extra stuff. The other thing that I suggest that you do is read the book. The book itself, the textbook, it's very easy. It was written by a It's an open source book. Oh yeah, you don't have to buy books from me. It's everything's online and Engage. It's an open source book. It's only like 250 odd pages. Each of the chapters are condensed. And I don't teach out of the book, but I have aligned the presentation to follow the book. So the first stuff we're going to cover is chapter one. So I definitely advise you read the book. Come to class with that in your head in advance. So that way the stuff I'm talking about sounds familiar. And again, that could be the basis of questions. Last but not least, before I get started, is I love questions. I really, really do. And it's very rare that I get questions. And don't think I don't like questions if no one asks questions. It's just chances are people that are your peers are scared or are nervous to ask questions. If you have a question, ask. Because I can guarantee you, if you're thinking of something, someone else in the class may be thinking of it as well. And so you're kind of helping them out by saying, hey, professor, can you explain this? If I go too fast, hey, professor, can you slow down? Hey, professor, can you repeat that? I don't mind. I don't mind it at all. The only time I get irritated, and I talked about it on the video, and I had a situation with a kid in this very classroom last semester, is that he'd be in the back watching videos, and I could tell he was watching videos because what was on his screen was way more interesting than what I was talking about. You could tell just by the body language and how engrossed he was. And then I would say something. And then 5 minutes later, he'd raise his hand. Professor, when are we having the exam? The whole class would start laughing. Because they knew I just literally said it. Or when's the paper due? You know, so I will answer your question. I will. Don't think I won't. But keep that in mind. I don't ask for much, but just kind of be with me. If you zone out, hey, it happens. I record all my classes. I put the links on my website. In fact, I got to wipe out last semester's. So if you do veg out in class, and I do talk about this in the video, you have the ability to go back and hear what you missed. It's no big deal. If you're absent, you have the ability to hear what you missed. I want you to be prepared as you can, because I want you all to succeed. Because my goal hasn't happened yet. I've been teaching, I think I became a middle school teacher back in 1994 or 5, maybe 6, I don't remember. Somewhere in the mid-90s. So that's almost 30 years. I've never had a group that everybody walked out with all A's. I would love it if you guys could be that first group. That would be epic. But we'll see how it goes. All right, before I get rolling into stuff, do any of you have any questions? All right, make sure, again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, you are enrolled in this class through Engage. If not, go over to IT, because you got to watch that video, syllabus review. And again, for those people who came late, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, it's going to be open until 11:59 p.m. There is an extra credit quiz on that video. So you can start the semester off with extra credit points. First topic of subject matter that we are going to cover this semester is a pivotal event in Western civilization. Today, they are collectively known as the Crusades. Anyone hear of these? I know most of you come from different high schools, and I know you probably learned different things. Any of you study the Crusades before? All right. The Crusades themselves were religious wars. Beginning in around the 11th century, so we'll say the thousands, Europe got fired up over religion, and many of the nobles and the knights and the soldiers started launching these military operations in the name of religion. Now, there were crusades all across the European continent. There were some that were big, there were some that were small. But of course, the most famous or infamous, depending upon your perspective, crusades were the crusades where the Europeans went to the Middle East to attempt to reconquer the Holy Land. Now, the college chose the Crusades as the starting point for this class was because, really, this was the beginning of Europe emerging as a separate, I don't want to say culture, but definitely European society became unique. It broke away from the Dark Ages and began modernizing. And of course, we are the inheritors of that. 1,000 years later, the things that those people did 1,000 years ago impact us, even to this day. Now, what sparked it was an event that was no different than hundreds of other events that happened through the history of the world. There was a regime change. There was a revolution of sorts. When one group of people, the Seljuk Turks, launched a war against the people who were ruling the Middle East, bless you, the Abbasids, and toppled their Islamic empire. That's a caliphate. A religious empire. That's what caliphate is. Now, the Seljuks were Muslim, but they believed in a different variation of Islam than the Abbasids. But this revolution was not just about religion. It was about power. It was about economics. And essentially, one group wanted to take the land controlled by another. Question. Rhetorical, but hopefully someone will be willing to answer it. Who writes history? What? The winners do. Right. The winners write history. Because what happens to the losers? Well, they lost. And we don't care about them. So, the Seljuk Turks come in. They seize control of the Middle East. They change the seat of power. And they dominate the region. But what the heck does this have to do with Europe? Well, here you go. Among many of the things that they did as they conquered was they began changing policy. We'll make it real simple. Policy. What's policy? Anyone know what policy is? No clue. No one knows what policy is.
Like rules, guidelines?
Yeah, rules, guidelines. That's right. And by the way, this happens. If you've ever had a job and there's been a manager change, the new manager comes in and changes some of the policies, changes the rules, changes the way things operate. Now, during the Abbasids, Jerusalem, I think we all know why Jerusalem is important, right? Which religions claim Jerusalem as a holy city? Christians? Anyone else? Jews? Anyone else? How about the Muslims? You got three major world religions that all claim one city. Well, during the Abbasid period, Jerusalem was an open city, which meant Christians and Jews and Muslims all could live there, all could do business there, and all could freely travel to the holy sites contained there within. But when the Seljuks came in, they changed that policy. They closed Jerusalem and declared that only Muslims could travel there. And they began driving out the Christians in particular. In the Christian faith, what makes Jerusalem so significant? What happened in Jerusalem? Well, something in more important that was significant happened to Jesus. You got Jesus, that's right. Yeah.
Jerusalem is the site where Jesus was crucified. And then he was taken off the cross. And then he was buried. And what happened 3 days later? He rose from the dead. Resurrection.
So, when the Seleucids came in and closed Jerusalem to the Christians, the Christian world was up in arms. But one empire in particular was furious. If I say the word Byzantium, does that mean anything to anybody? The Byzantine Empire. Very good. The Byzantine Empire.
Real quick. Byzantium, and you'll see the spelling in your book, and I think I touched upon here, is throughout history commonly referred to as the Eastern Roman Empire. When Rome, the city of Rome, fell to the barbarians and the last emperor, Western emperor, was removed, the Eastern Empire in Constantinople remained. And that empire lasted all the way into the 15th century. They were in control of much of Turkey at this point, if you know geography, right at the mouth of the Black Sea. They controlled the Balkan Peninsula. But they conquered and controlled, well, actually they held, the modern city of Istanbul. That was their capital.
So, when the Seleucid Turks closed Jerusalem, the emperor of Byzantium, a man by the name of Alexios I, sent word to the most powerful person in Western Europe, the Pope. The Pope at the time was a man by the name of Urban II. You don't have to remember when he was Pope. I don't know why I have that on there. I thought I purged all the dates, but I guess I stink. All right. Now, in Alexios' appeal, he basically stated point blank that these Muslims are engaging in outright terrorism against Christians. They're violating churches, violating holy sites, violating Christian women. And he begged and he pleaded for assistance. Now, here's the interesting thing. Notice when, or maybe that's why I left it on there. Notice when Urban was the Pope. Notice when Jerusalem was closed. Oh, why don't we go backwards? Why did it take so long for the emperor to reach out to the Pope and say, hey, can you get some of your Western European warriors and come help us? You know why? Politics! How many people like politics? Anyone stay up late last night to watch the returns of the Iowa caucuses? I went to bed too. Politics for many people. Because you quickly. What's your name?
Madeline.
Yeah, Madeline said, no, I don't like politics. Truth of the matter is politics are at the heart of everything. They are. Because all politics are is one person wants things their way and someone else wants it their way. So they have a disagreement. That's all politics is. And of course, everything is political. Well, the truth is even though the Byzantines were Christians and the Europeans were Christians, they practiced different variations of Christianity, and politically they didn't get along. They disagreed. So they weren't friends. And here's another irony. Alexios' appeal to Western Europe was the second appeal to get help with Jerusalem. But help did not come because of a schism. Before the spelling comes up, does anyone ever heard of that word before, a schism? Right, I'll give you the spelling. A schism. A schism is a divide, a split. In 1054, this is the way history works, by the way, if you weren't aware of that. History just doesn't happen. History is the culmination of things that happened before. So 16 years before the Seleucids took Jerusalem, East and West had a division, a split, and they stopped talking to one another. So the first appeal went unanswered. And then, even though it was, do the mental math real quick, Lamanic, 36 years later, even the second appeal almost didn't happen because of a division. Politics. What occurred? Religion. The popes established rules for the Western Christian churches. In Constantinople, there was a figure called a patriarch, who was the Eastern version of the Pope. He set policies, but they disagreed on certain religious matters. So you know what each one did to one another in 1054? They excommunicated one another. Anyone know what excommunication is? What?
Push to the outside of communication.
Well, push to the outside, you're right. But what are you pushed out of?
Your society.
And where can you not go if we're talking religiously speaking?
Back into religion and your
society. And what's the goal of religion to get you to where?
Together? Oh, heaven?
Yeah. All religions have the basic same rule. You have to follow the rules of the religion to get to the afterlife. And if you are kicked out of that, you can't get there. One of the powers that religious figures do is they kick people out who they don't like. So the irony was, is in 1054, the patriarch excommunicated the pope and said, you cannot be part of the Christian church. Well, the pope turned around and did the same thing. So when we're talking about them being divided, they literally hated one another. Because if you can't go to church, you can't utilize the faith as the vehicle into the afterlife, and where do you end up? Hell. Anyone want to go to the eternal barbecue? Tortured and roasted on the spigot of Lucifer? Man, hell is not a nice place to be. All right. Yes.
Was it the Eastern or Western side that excommunicated the Pope?
Well, the Western side is the Pope.
Okay.
The Eastern side is the Patriarch. And both excommunicated each other. All right. So, the first appeal actually came from the Emperor Michael VII and Gregory. It went to the Pope Gregory VII. And interestingly enough, in 1073, Gregory contemplated raising an army and leading them to the Middle East. But the problem was as bad as relationships were between the Eastern Empire and the Western Church,
In the West, there was political division because the Pope was not getting along with the kings. Not that you need to remember this one for the exam, but your book does talk about it a little bit. In order for the Pope to raise an army, the Pope had to contact the kings, but the kings were angry with the Pope because they were fighting for political control over the church in an event known as the investiture controversy. Again, FYI stuff. The Pope believed that only the Pope, as God's representative on the earth, could name cardinals and bishops. The Pope felt it was his job to pick the leadership in the institution, the organization. Well, guess what? The kings thought the same. Because after all, if there's going to be a cardinal for France, shouldn't the king of France pick who's going to be the Pope? Who's going to be his representative going before the church? So, talk about politics. I know these technically are religious controversies, but at their face, they're actually politics. So the East and the West didn't get along, and the West was hating on one another. There was just division across the board. So how can you unify in a cause if you're all divided? You know, you can't. It just can't be done. So this is the reason why the Seljuks were allowed to control Jerusalem for onwards of 70 years before, sorry, 27 years before the West did anything because of politics. Questions? All right. Well, that changed when the appeal came, and in March 1095, the Pope finally decides to act. The Pope being Urban II. The appeal being the one that comes from Alexios. The Pope listens to the appeal and decides to respond. Because the Seljuks, by 1090, 1091, 1092, all the way up to 1095, slowly began conquering all of Turkey, and they were getting really close to Constantinople itself. So not only did the Seljuks take over all the religious sites, now they're on the verge of conquering the Eastern Christian Empire. But the Pope realized he was not a dictator. The Pope was not an emperor. The Pope could not order people to do something. So what does he do? He calls for a gathering of all of the religious leaders in Western Europe. All of the important cardinals and some bishops, they travel to the city of Clermont. And they have council. Have any of you ever sat in on a presentation? What's the most effective presentations?
The ones you can relate to.
So the presenter has to speak in terms that the listeners can appreciate. So what does the ambassador do? He starts talking about all of the horrors, all of the atrocities that these violent Saracen barbarians are engaged in. He talks about assaults. He talks about rapes. He talks about desecration. I mean, when you hear stories of convents of nuns being gang raped, well, if you're a cardinal or a
bishop, a man of the church, you are going to be horrified. You are going to be disgusted. And you are going to want action. So after the presentation is done, the Pope basically asks the council, what do you want to do about this? And one by one, they vote. I will go back to my king and I will convince him to raise forces and we will act to free the world of these Seljuks. Questions? FYI, I'm not playing with my phone. I'm also a lawyer, besides being a professor, and this is how my law firm contacts me. So if I get distracted and I start responding to them, because I'm trying to make money. Every single potential text is upwards of $250 for me. So that was not. My wife is at home, so she just turned off the doors, hitting the door sensor. All right, so where was I as I gave you a little mental break? So we have this council. We have a vote. The council votes to go to war. So once the council votes, the Pope then must make the message, the declaration, that is going to be read all across Europe. And it is presented on November 27th. Again, you don't need to remember the dates. I just have those over there just for chronology's sake. And in his declaration, he focuses on three things. And these are the three things that I would want you to know. Three things that come out of the declaration. First, goes to the investiture controversy. The Pope says that Christians must stop fighting one another. The first point of Urban's declaration. Christians must unite. Christians must unite. I mean, how did Abraham Lincoln phrase it? A house divided cannot stand. Two. The Pope encourages all Christians to take up the cross and to wage holy war against the infidels. All Christians, take up the cross and wage holy war. FYI, side note. Never before in Western Europe had any leader combined war and religion. War prior to that was always about territorial or economic gain. Why do you think the Pope would inject religion into this? No idea? All right. Well, here's the reason why, and that's the third reason. Rewards. The Pope promises rewards for anyone who stops fighting against one another, picks up the cross, and wages holy war against the infidels. You will get stuff. You know what you'll get? Both material and spiritual rewards. If you go fight these crusades, you will get stuff. And you'll be rewarded in the afterlife. You know why? Because God wants you to go. Questions? what would you do for a Klondike bar? What could you do? What would you be willing to do if you could take gold and spices and land from somebody? And on top of it, have a greater chance of getting to heaven. Would you sign up? Yeah. It's not a bad gig. Now here's the funny thing. This was nothing new. Again, events of today occur because of things that happened yesterday. When the Pope issued his declaration and basically encouraged people to take up the cross and engage in this holy fighting and promise them stuff, all the Pope was doing was articulating existing church law. How many of you are Catholics? Couple? You know your church has laws, right? Rules that we must follow? This is going to be really annoying. This is going to drive me nuts. Oh, I'm going to break the door. Ooh, it's stuck, though. All right, that's fine. The Pope, as the head of the church, has the power to make the rules for the church. He can make law. And if you are a member of the church, if the Pope makes a law, what must you do? You must follow it, exactly. Because that's the way laws work. Well, they don't have a constitution in the church where there's separation of powers and there's a legislative branch and an executive branch and a bill becomes a law and signed into... No. There's none of that. Within the Catholic Church, the Pope has the ability to make decrees through what are called papal bulls. Papal bulls. These are legal decrees issued by popes. Every single pope that has ever served, going all the way back to St. Peter, has issued papal bulls. But if a pope issues them, you are obligated to follow. Because if you don't follow the law of the pope, what's the consequence? Excommunication, and then where are you going to go? No, you're going to go down, yeah. All right. In 1089, the Pope issued what in Latin? Any Latin scholars in here? I'll find out translated. But he issued what in Latin is the Bulle Sacrae Crucitae, which stands for, and this is how it will be on the exam, the Bull of the Sacred Crusade. The Bull of the Sacred Crusade. This, by the way, was issued in 1089. 6 years before. Why did Urban issue such a declaration? Well, how many of you knew that for about 500 years, the Muslims controlled most of Spain? No? It was give or take. Well, it was during the reign of Charlemagne. No, it was before Charlemagne. Was it Pepin? No, it was before Pepin. Maybe it was even longer than that. Maybe it was around 600 AD. The Muslims crossed the Straits of Gibraltar and invaded the Iberian Peninsula. And they controlled almost all of Spain and Portugal. And they did it for hundreds of years. But there were a couple of tiny Christian kingdoms along the modern French border, Castile being one of them, that had tried fighting back, tried reconquering Spain for the church, known as the Reconquista, which we'll talk about. Not yet, though. But the Castilians
had contacted the Pope and said, hey, you know something, we need to fire up the base. We need to get people willing to go and fight the war against not other human beings, but people of different faiths.
So the Pope made it the law. And in this bull, Pope Urban declared that anyone who fights against Muslims or pagans or heretics, anyone who goes to war and fights Muslims, pagans, or heretics, gets an indulgence. Anyone know what an indulgence is? Indulgence? No? According to the Catholic Church, the Pope has the power to grant an indulgence, which is a forgiveness of a sin. He does so by tapping the surplus grace that has been built up over the ages as a result of the sacrifice of all the saints. So the saints did so good, there's extra goodwill. The Pope can tap it and can give it to people. If you get a papal indulgence, guess where you're not going to go? You're not going to go to hell. So think about this. The Pope says, if you go kill Muslims or pagans or heretics, I will forgive you for anything bad that you did. So if you committed murder in the past, you committed rape, arsony, whatever, you go fight for me and I will forgive you.
That's not a bad gig. So there's the reward, that's the spiritual aspect of it. Well, here's the reward of the material. Before he issued his declaration, early in 1095, the Pope issued another bull known as Terra Nullius. And by the way, I'm going to come back to this one multiple times as we go forward throughout the semester. Because this was the law of the church for hundreds of years. It has since been repealed. Terra Nullius is Latin for nobody's land. Nobody's land.
Very simple. The Pope actually said, by law, that only Christians are allowed to own land. So if you are not a Christian, you cannot own land. And if you're walking along the street and you look down, and sitting there in the grass is a $20 bill. And there's no license, there's no picture, there's no name or number on that $20 bill. What can you do with it legally? Well, you can put it in your pocket.
Because the only way to own something is to have possession over it. As the old saying goes, possession is 9/10 of the law. If you don't physically control your things and you leave them lying around and there's no proof that you actually own them, someone can pick it up and take it.
But here's the Pope basically saying that even if they do hold on to it, it doesn't count if they're not a Christian.
So go kill them. Kill them all. And you can have their stuff. You can have their homes, you can have their farms, you can have their food, you can have their wives if you want. Because they don't have a right to them.
It's the law of the church. So now who's going to get on a ship and go across the sea? Any takers? Whatever you can take is yours. And whatever you did in the past, no worries. No one's going to sign up, really? Come on, be honest. Go get free stuff. Fine, be that way. Be modernists. Don't think like someone in 1095. Well, here's the truth. The moment the Pope issues the declaration, the moment the Pope basically says it's the law of the church that you can go out and get stuff and you'll get your any sins that you did in the past wiped away, just go kill people, people went nuts. They went crazy. It was a frenzy. It was worse than whenever the news says there's going to be snow and people rush to the grocery stores. Got to get their loaves of bread and gallons of milk because they can't stay in their house for a day, God forbid. The people were all fired up. Literally speaking, every corner of Europe, I've read documentation that dates back to this period. People were crying out in the street, Deus vult, which is Latin for God is great. God wills it. But here's the funny thing. The problem was they didn't read the fine print. How many of you, when you put a new app on your phone, read the terms? No? You know that every app that you have on your phone allows the company to track where you are and to track every little bit of data that pushes through your phone, including all of your messages? Did you know that? And they can sell that. And you gave consent because you didn't read the fine print. Because you got to watch TikToks. In the fine print, the Pope literally said, only warriors need apply. He wanted warriors. He wanted knights. He wanted men willing to engage in violence. Because he wanted to send them to go kill. You know what the Pope actually put in his declaration? He literally said, no old people. Old people need not apply. No feeble people. People who have handicaps, health issues, don't apply. You know who also need not apply? No women. And he points out the obvious. He says in his declaration, and I quote, they are more of a hindrance than aid, more of a burden than an advantage. No offense, but back in 1095, war was physical. You wore 50 pounds of armor, and you had a handheld weapon, and you engaged in face-to-face combat. And you literally needed to be able to exert all of your strength to hack through the armor in the body of the person against you. Because if you didn't have that physical strength, you were going to die. In today's modern warfare, you have guns. You don't have to be big and strong to fire a gun. You can have women engage in combat. Modern technology is the equalizer. But back then, it was all about brute strength. So the Pope basically said, unless you can go and handle the warfare of the day, don't bother. This is not for you. But who reads the fine print? No? No one? You always should. And again, I'm a lawyer. That's my legal advice to you. Always read the fine print, because that's when they get you. I know they do that on purpose. You know the favorite clause that I love in most of the apps? They literally say if there's anything in their app that burns out your phone, that the company is not responsible for it. and that you can't sue them. You can go to mediation if you want. And usually the mediation site is like somewhere in like Michigan. So if you have a complaint, you can't go to court, you can't sue, the company's not going to pay for it, and if you do want to file a complaint, at your own expense, you have to get in a plane, fly to Michigan, file a request for mediation. That could be 2 years down the road. But that's in the fine print. Always read the fine print. All right. So here we go, the launching of the first major crusade to the Middle East. We know what the Pope is promising. We know who the Pope wants. But sometimes the best laid plans get laid to waste. You ever hear that expression? The best laid plans are laid to waste. I love that line. If you're a planner, you can try planning for every contingency. But the way things usually end up unraveling is exactly something that you did not predict. Because life's funny that way. The plan was an army of warriors and knights that would be drawn from France and Germany and Italy would gather and would depart on August 15th, 1096. August 15th is a holy day. It's the Feast of Assumption. For you, those of you who don't know, that's the date when the body of the Virgin Mary was taken into heaven by God. So this was a religious day to fire the people up, knowing that God would be on their side. But sometimes even the best plans are laid to waste. Before the Crusaders left, two horrific events occurred. Horrific, even by standards back then. Number one, an event known as the Rhineland Massacres. All right. If you roughly know the map of Europe, actually for you it would be backwards. So France would be over here near the Atlantic Ocean, and then kind of close to abutting it is where Germany is. When you get into Germany, you go in about 90 miles. There's a major river called the Rhine River. In the valley around the Rhine River is where many of the old German cities were located. In villages and towns. In that region, there just so happened to be a very large Jewish population. Because the German princes were focused on this as opposed to this. So they allowed anyone to come in that would work hard and contribute to the economies. So the fact that these people were Jews didn't bother the rulers. But what church are the Jews not part of? What? What?
The
Christian church, right. Because the Jews don't believe spiritually that Jesus is the Messiah, that Jesus is the Son of God. They believe in God. They just don't do the Jesus thing. So here's the thing. If they don't believe in the rules of the church, let's go back to the Bulla Sacrae Crucitae, in which the Pope said that anyone who takes part in a crusade against Muslims or pagans, of which the Jews are not Muslims, they don't accept Muhammad as their prophet, nor do they worship multiple gods. But do they follow the rules of the church? You saying yes? You're sitting there, but you're nodding your head, yes. No, they can't be. Because what do the Jews not accept? Which is kind of like the big part of being a Christian. You're that guy right there, Jesus. If you don't believe Jesus is the Son of God, you can't be a Christian. You can be something else, but you can't be a Christian. That's kind of the whole big point. So if you are not part of the church, by definition, and you don't follow the rules, what are you? You are an infidel, a heretic, a non-believer. And what did the Pope promise to anyone who was willing to wage war against Muslims, pagans, or heretics? An indulgence. Throughout the winter, 1095 into 1096 and into the spring, events worse than what took place in Israel back in October took place all throughout the Rhineland. Mobs, commonly referred to as pogroms, of people rose up and began attacking their literal neighbors and engaging in wholesale violence against them, killing them, raping them, taking their stuff, because they weren't believers. Why would these people suddenly turn against their neighbors? Yeah, by who?
The Pope.
And the Pope is kind of like the boss, right?
Yeah.
Pope tells you to jump. Are you going to jump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this time, they believed, and like still a lot nowadays too, in some parts, they believe everything that he says.
Well, because he's the Holy Father. He's the head of the church, yeah. So the Pope actually told them to do this, and he promised them rewards. If you do this, I'll forgive you for what you did in the past, and you can take their stuff. And by the way, if you're going to launch a massive campaign to leave your country, march across a continent, and go to a foreign land, what are you going to need lots of?
Money!
So the sad part was, is this was left less about religion, it was more about taking their bank accounts. But tens of thousands of Jews were slaughtered. We're not talking just a couple. Tens of thousands. Entire Jewish populations and villages were wiped out. There were stories of nobles and priests trying to give sanctuary to the Jews, and it didn't stop the mobs. And in fact, there was actually a bishop that went out, and I think it was the village of Worms, I don't remember. But there was one bishop that actually went out to confront the mob, to tell them, this is not what God wants, and they actually assaulted the bishop. People, when they're fired up, do wacky, crazy things, because human beings are nuts. And when you sprinkle in monetary opportunity and religion, that's when you see the nastiest in human beings. Now, by the way, there are many Jewish historians that refer to this as the first Holocaust. And if that wasn't bad enough, guess what the mobs of people, after they attacked the Jews and took all their stuff, decided to do? They decided to go to the Middle East because the Pope said so. But who was involved in the mobs? Peasants? Lesser nobles that maybe didn't have lots of money? People who were farmers or bakers or candlestick makers. People who had nothing, poor, and decided, hey, this is the key to making lots of money. Well, they envisioned that if they gathered together and went to the Middle East, that they would get the rewards, both here and now and then and thereafter. The leader of this movement was a charismatic preacher called Peter the Hermit, in which he fired up the masses. He actually told the people that he was appointed by Christ himself to preach.
He's crazy. He's a madman. But the people heard what they wanted to hear, and they fell in line. Somewhere around 40,000. They gathered together and they marched across the continent of Europe. The problem was no leaders, no equipment. So as they march the hundreds of miles through multiple territories and empires, where are they going to get their food? You couldn't take the app out and call Uber Eats. There was no Domino's down the road. No Stop and Shops. As you walk across the land with nothing, where are you going to get the food? Do you know? I know. Every single house they walk by, every single farm, every single village, everywhere they went, they lived off the land. They preyed upon the local inhabitants. They took food, they took clothing, they took supplies through force, threat of violence, because God wills it. It got so bad that by the time they got into the Balkans and down into the Byzantium Empire, the Byzantines actually thought they were an invading army, sent out their own army, and they actually attacked the People's Crusaders. And about 10,000 of them were wiped out before Peter the Hermit went and let himself get captured and basically talked to the Byzantine general and explain what was going on. So right out of the gates, a quarter of them were dead. Because what can peasants not do well against professional soldiers? Fight. So Peter the Hermit gets taken to Constantinople, meets with Alexios. Peter tells him what they're planning on doing, and Alexios is like, hey, you people are crazy. You have no warriors, you have no equipment, and you think that God's going to give you victory? But you're also terrifying my people. So the emperor literally takes what was left of the People's Crusade, puts them on boats free of charge, and ships them into the Middle East, and says, have fun. And what do you think the Seljuks did when they got word of this quote-unquote army? They descended upon them and nearly killed them all. At the Battle of Crest, over 20,000 of these peoples were slaughtered by the Seljuks. Once the force was dead, the Seljuks then went and took the camp where the remnants were, and many of them were women and elderly people, captured them all, and sold them into slavery. 40,000 people just went poof, because they thought God would give them a victory. Not so good out of the gates, eh? Well, we'll find out on Thursday what happened to the actual army. All right. To repeat what I said earlier, make sure you are enrolled in Engage. If you go into Engage and you cannot see this class, go to IT today. Two, watch the video. That's about a third of the way down as you scroll. That video will cover the entire class in terms of a syllabus review. And then on Wednesday, take the syllabus review video quiz and get some extra credit. If you have any questions about anything that you see in that video, send me an email. It should be around tomorrow, I believe. So I'll do my best to be online to respond. Or save your questions for Thursday. Any last minute questions? Yes.
Did you post it already?
It's in there.
It's not popular.
What?
It's
No, it's not. The quiz is not going to open till tomorrow.
Okay.
And I'll do when I, because I have break now, I'll send out reminders that has the links. So 8 a.m. till 11:59 p.m. You have all day to take the quiz. So if you can't watch the video today, but you got a light day tomorrow, watch the video and then take the quiz. If you want to watch the video today and do the quiz, well, the quiz will be tomorrow. That's what you got to do. Just don't forget, okay? Careful out there. It's snow. We're all used to snow, but don't do anything crazy, slip sliding, because no broken bones to start the semester off. That's not a good way to start the term. Stay warm. We'll see you all on Thursday.